304 in the Fast Lane. Time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Thompson will have the Cardinal game tonight on FS Midwest with Dan McLaughlin. So BT is not with us today. It's Ronj and Randy as the Cardinals will resume action against the Diamondbacks post-All-Star break tonight at the ballpark. It's a 7:15 game, and Adam Wainwright has been scratched due to back spasms. So the Cardinals will pitch Daniel Ponce de Leon, and he'll try to navigate a victory over the Diamondbacks and Robbie Ray.
Very well done, Randy.
Thank you.
I kind of expected it. Well, not the injury. Well, I don't know. What was the over-under? Remember before the season started, we talked about what the over-under for starts for him would be.
I think I went 20.
Okay. And I guess we could, where are we right now? How many is it so far for the season?
We'll have to look that up.
I gotta look it up right now. But I do believe, let's see, we are looking at 16 games he's played in. He has started in 16.
Yeah.
So he's going to get to 20.
Yeah.
He'll go over that. But making 30 starts is just not going to happen for Adam Wainwright this year. And there's nothing, it's not his fault. There's nothing he can do about this. It's just that at some point you get to your career and your body starts to break down on you. And he's had a lot of these now over the last several seasons. So expecting a lot out of him in terms of innings, in terms of starts, it just isn't realistic, and I don't think it was from the beginning of the season. However, all he needed to be was a fifth starter. That's it, mm-hmm. right? And if you can get 20 to 25 starts from your fifth starter, maybe mix in some younger pitchers throughout the year, that happens pretty much for every team, you should have been in pretty good shape. But unfortunately for them, they've had problems outside of where he is. It will be nice to see Ponce de Leon get a little bit of work here, because the Cardinals now are in a position where, yes, I think they still are hoping that they can contend for the remainder of the year, maybe slip in as a wild card or even win the division. But also, there's evaluation of talent they're going to have to do here. They are going to have to find out if they believe in Ponce de Leon enough to mm-hmm. give him starts for 2020. So these can be important innings for him as the season progresses here. And again, we're past the halfway point of the year now, where we're starting the official second half. This is going to be a really important second half for the Cardinals.
And the Cardinals start the second half at 44-44. Last year, it took 91 wins to get the second wild card. Colorado was the second wild card. 95 for the Cubs and the Brewers to tie for the National League Central lead. To get to 91 wins, the Cardinals would have to win 43 games, right? 43 and 21, something like that.
I can't do the math.
But they would need 43 more wins to get to 91. They would need 46.
46, yes. No, 47.
47 to get to 91.
That was too hard for two adults.
Yeah, it really was. And so if you need 47, that means that you can only afford to lose 27. You'd have to go 47-27, and I don't know that the Cardinals are capable of playing 20 games over 500 the rest of the way.
Well, this would mean they're going to have to play a lot better than they did in the first half. Through 88 games, you've only got 44 wins. I don't know how you do it in less time, get more victories. And this team just hasn't shown that it's going to be able to take off. That's not to say they won't do it or it's completely impossible for it to happen, but the odds are very much against them. However, I would also argue that maybe you don't need 90 wins in the National League Central this year. It is by far the closest division in terms of first place to last place. Only 4.5 games separate the Cubs from the Reds. The Reds are in last place in the division. The division leader has the fewest amount of wins of any division leader right now in baseball, so it probably won't even take that.
But the division leader, the Cubs, in Joe Maddon's first year, went 50-25 after the All-Star break. In his second year, they went 50-23 after the All-Star break. In 2017, they went 49-25 after the All-Star break. And last year, they were 10 over, 40-30 after the break. Joe Maddon sets his team up, somewhat like Tony La Russa did, to put the foot on the gas in the second half of the season after the All-Star break. And even with Kyle Hendricks dealing with his injuries and Cole Hamels on the DL. I still think that the Cubs are managed to do well in the second half of the season, and I think they'll probably play at least 10 over, if not 15 over, the rest of the way.
Now, it's not necessarily true that just because they've done it the last several years where they play great baseball in the second half, that it's going to happen again.
But there's a big picture plan there.
But there's certainly a trend. And if you're trying to project what's going to happen this year, I think all you can do is look at what has happened in recent history, look at the roster they have, look at the ability on that roster, and just kind of assume that they're probably going to take off here at some point. It may not be, it may not be crazy good baseball like the Dodgers played in the first half. But if I had to pick between the Cubs and the Cardinals to really take off here in the second half of the season, I'm not picking the Cardinals. And I don't think anybody who's looking at it objectively would think so. The other reason for it is not just because of what's on the roster. It's also because of what I believe the Cubs are willing to do to bolster this roster. They are looking at themselves as a team that is playing within a championship window. They know they're good. They know they've got deficiencies. I think they would be more willing to extend themselves to get a player they need. So a team that probably needs a starting pitcher, or maybe they even make some kind of lineup change. I know Whit Merrifield has been thrown around as a possibility for them. I don't know if it's realistic, but they've been talking about it. So I do believe they are more likely to make a significant move before the deadline on the 31st than the Cardinals are, which is not good for St. Louis.
And I know that Ian Happ is not having a good year at AAA, but Ian Happ is still an interesting guy to have on a team. That's one guy that the Cubs could move. They could move somebody off of their roster to get better. Their system is not great, but I do believe that if I were in the shoes of the Giants, for example, and the Cubs came calling about Bumgarner, there's a couple of guys on that roster that would intrigue me, and Happ would be one of them in terms of what the Giants would be looking for.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs end up moving Schwarber, too. He's been productive for them, but I think they're probably dealing from a position of strength when it comes to that. I know that locally they are concerned about the lack of offense, which is crazy because they've got about the third or fourth best offense in the National League right now. They've been producing. So that just kind of gives you the level of urgency they have, and I don't believe that urgency is here. I don't believe the Cardinals feel that same sense of we got to do everything we can to get to the postseason. Not in 2019. I think they're kicking the can down the road a little bit here and probably looking toward next year and the year after that as well.
I would hope that because they said during the offseason that 2019 was important, I would hope that they are focused on getting to the playoffs here in 2019. But until they do something, you have to believe that they're going to go back to what they have done in the past. And that is, in general, when you reach the trade deadline, protect their prospects. I know they traded four prospects for Ozuna and three for Goldschmidt. But the last time the Cardinals made a big trade during the season in which they gave up young players was 2009 when they got Holiday.
Yeah.
And they gave up Brett Wallace and Clayton Mortensen and one of the Shane Peterson, I think, was the other one. It's been a long time. That's a decade now since they've done that. And until they change those stripes, I don't believe this group of Tigers will.
Well, you also have to look at what they have and trying to figure out what the Cardinals think of themselves. Do they really think they probably still think this is a competitive team as the division goes? And I think that's right. It's just because the division is so close. So by definition, they are competitive within the division. But do you think they project themselves 2.5 months from now as being as good as any other playoff team? Like
they shouldn't.
I think privately they probably don't. I think they probably understand that they can get into a playoff. And I know there's a little bit of there's some randomness when it comes to the postseason. But also, they're not set up really well if the playoffs were to start right now.
It's Fastlane on 101 ESPN. Tomorrow is a big day at the ballpark. The annual Join for Joe Marrow Drive will take place. We're going to talk to our friend Jen Langosh of MLB.com about that and the Cardinals next in the Fastlane on 101 ESPN. Brad Thompson is out today. He'll have the Cardinal broadcast tonight on FS Midwest with Danny Mac. So it's Ronge and Randy, and now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line is our friend Jen Langosch of MLB.com. Jen, one of the founders of the annual Join for Joe Bone Marrow Drive at Busch Stadium, and it takes place this year tomorrow as the Cardinals take on the Diamondbacks in a 6:15 game. Jen, always good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for flashing back to having me as a guest this week.
We love it. And for those that aren't aware, you have taken over as a managing editor at MLB.com. How's the new gig?
Well, it's good because I no longer have to solve all the Cardinals' problems. So I'm happy to take that off my plate. But it's been really good. It's a lot of fun to work with writers in other places and helping them kind of develop their careers in this business and hopefully pass along something I've learned in my 12, 13 years covering baseball along the way.
You're great. Hey, let's start with the Join for Joe. You, as I mentioned, one of the founders of the event to honor the memory of Joe Strauss, the former Cardinal beat writer who died of leukemia. Tell us what Join for Joe is.
Yeah, so we are, as you mentioned, having this event tomorrow at Busch Stadium. This is our fourth annual Join for Joe. We started as a way to both honor the legacy of the late Joe Strauss, but also to help people who are fighting the same fight that he did with blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma. Essentially, we are going to be educating folks at the ballpark about what it means to be a bone marrow donor and hopefully registering some of those people to join the registry where if down the road there is a need of an individual with cancer and if you are a match for that person, then you can go through the donation process. So the biggest thing, I think, is the education process. There's a lot of people out there who are really scared about what it means to be a bone marrow donor, some misconceptions about what it takes. It's really not as invasive a procedure as you're led to believe. So we will have people on hand who have donated before, can talk to you about that. It will only take a few minutes of your time if you want to join the registry. And again, we hope that together in this community, as a way to honor Joe, we can save some lives.
For anybody who might be thinking about it right now, the possibility of donating and have those concerns you're talking about, what's something that might alleviate those concerns?
Well, first off, I mean, feel free to go check out the website, bethematch.org. Be the Match is the largest donor registry in the world. And it was in the news here a lot. I mean, for those of you who are familiar with Layla Anderson's story, she was able to find her donor through the Be the Match organization. It lays out really well on the website what it means to be a donor, what it entails. There's stories of people who have gone through it. I can tell you that in most instances, donation is very similar to what it means to go and donate blood. Now, it takes a lot longer. It's a several-hour process. But in terms of the recovery, it's not as terrible as a lot of people think it is. Oftentimes, the exception to that, what is a little bit more invasive, is if you are donating to a child. But, you know, I think about how many times we meet people along the way who are battling illness or cancer, and we often say, I wish there was something I could do for you to help. In this case, there is, and there are 14,000 patients right now across this country that are looking for their match that there isn't one yet for, and we're hoping to be able to match some of those people with their life-saving match this weekend.
And by the way, the Blues for years have had a Be the Match event also, and Jeremy Rutherford wrote a great piece at The Athletic back in December about a Blues fan who was a match for an 18-year-old in Alabama, and Michael Helrick of St. Louis was able to donate and save this young woman's life. So you never know, Jen, when you will be the person that can contribute to somebody being able to continue living.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about the process of going through it and maybe the fears that there are about this process, again, you think about the person that the donation is going to and all that they have been through and the opportunity you have to lengthen their life and to improve their quality of life. You know, hopefully a short hospital stay it is something that you'd be willing to do to help those folks. So it's interesting. We have a very unique Cardinals connection to this year's event. Former Cardinals coach Rich Hacker, actually is a Belleville native and resident right now. He recently went through a transplant here at Siteman Cancer Center. His son, Scott, will be on hand to talk on Saturday at the ballpark about what that entailed and will be honored on the field. And good news for Rich is that that transplant went really well. He's still recovering in the hospital, but hopes to be back home soon.
Great. And you can stop by the Ford Plaza where survivors and donors and patients awaiting transplant will be on hand. That's tomorrow before the 6:15 game at the ballpark between the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks. All right, Jen, let's talk a little bit about this 44-44 team. Is there anything that you have seen? And you did cover them for most of the first half of the season. Anything that you've seen that makes you think that they can go on a run and in the remaining 74 games be 20 games over 500?
Probably more than anything is the back of the baseball cards of some of these players, right? I mean, you look at Paul Goldschmidt's career. You have to believe that his numbers are going to trend toward where they've always been. I just don't think he has hit the career decline this aggressively as we saw in the first half. You know, Matt Carpenter, you have to believe that his second half is going to be substantially better than his first half. I still believe a guy like Jack Flaherty, a guy like Miles Michaelis have a step up that they can take. I look at this roster and I see talent. I see a lot more talent than I think has played out. And I think you have to be, if you want to look for reasons to be encouraged, I think you have to be encouraged by the fact that the Cardinals are playing a better brand of baseball in terms of clean defense and better base running. Those are really good fundamentals to start with. Right now, though, they are going to need their big core players to step up. And again, the fact that you are where you are with so much having gone wrong, you know, I think you can take a glass half full outlook on this second half. That being said, I think, guys, these next 2 weeks are going to be really, really critical to what happens over the next 2.5 months, in that if this team doesn't give the front office a reason to be confident in this group, I just don't see them making any big, bold moves up at the trade deadline. And then this is the team you're stuck with going into the end of September.
So that is, I think, a hopeful view, if we're looking for one. And I believe most people who are following this team closely feel the exact same way that, yeah, I mean, if all that stuff happens, they're going to be in pretty good shape. But if you take the, realistic view and considering everything that has been going on and what they might be lacking, is there a way to fix those things if they're not going to make a significant move before the deadline?
You know, I think you can enhance this roster, but I think if you do not get the expected contributions from some of those core pieces that I mentioned, I'm not sure that making additions is going to make that big of a difference. I mean, if Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter don't hit like you need them to, I'm not sure what you're going to do to make this team that much better. You know, that being said, I still look at this team as really needing an anchor in the starting rotation. And, you know, you kind of forecasted coming into the season what the rotation could look like. And this team spoke a lot about its depth, and for good reason. But now you're in a situation where I don't think you can expect Alex Reyes to maybe contribute at all this year. Clearly, Carlos Martinez is going to spend the rest of his year in the bullpen. You've had some issues with some of the starters staying healthy as it is. You know, Adam Wainwright, the latest to not be able to make a start. I just don't think they have the depth in the rotation to be able to handle the innings load, not only in the second half of the season, but certainly if you get into October, I just don't see that anchor there. So I think if this is a team that does want to go all in, that thinks this group can be special and make some sort of run, I think you have to add to that rotation.
And Jim, when you look at the prospects the Cardinals gave up for Ozuna and for Paul Goldschmidt, they liked them, but when they made those trades, they weren't saying, man, I don't want to do this. It's almost like they have to make a deal like that, where it's to get something as good as what we're talking about here, they're going to have to do something really uncomfortable in terms of giving up a high-level prospect.
Yeah, sometimes it has to hurt, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at some of the impact deals across baseball, particularly the midseason deals that are made. Yeah, it hurts. But if your goal is to get to October and make a run into October, you're going to have to go out and find the type of player that another team is going to ask those sort of prospects for. So, yeah, I mean, they've been very fortunate to have a nice farm system from which they can deal, and they've been able to deal from areas of depth, and I think they can still do so to some extent. But, yeah, at some point, you do have to give up elite talent to be able to get elite talent back. You know, I look at the landscape of this trade market, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of players out there that I would do that for, so there might be some hesitancy, but perhaps it's an approach that they need to take more aggressively during the offseason.
Would you roll the dice on a Madison Bumgarner rental?
I would absolutely roll the dice. I mean, I'm not sure what there is to lose. I've contended all year that I think this rotation could benefit from having a left-handed presence, and when you talk about postseason pedigree, I'm not sure in this decade it gets better than Madison Bumgarner. So, yeah, he's a guy I'd roll the dice on. I don't know, though, if he is a guy who I would give up my best prospects for, but I also don't think the Giants have that as a realistic expectation for what return they might get.
I think the other thing about a guy like him, and we saw it with Max Muncy a couple of weeks ago, the Cardinals used to have that Lance Lynn, that John Lackey, that Tommy Pham edge that really doesn't exist on this team now. I think Bumgarner would bring some of that.
I think so. And he would immediately command a presence in the clubhouse that you're right, I think, has been lacking. And, you know, if you want to look for a comparable, you think back to the year that the Cardinals really shook it up midseason and made that trade for John Lackey. I mean, that was a trade that not only involved bringing in talent, but it was made to send a message to the clubhouse that the status quo was not okay. And that was a very good team as it was. And so you do wonder if the Cardinals, as they're facing the possibility of missing the postseason for a fourth straight year, look internally and say, hey, we've got to do something to shake up this core, to send some sort of message and bring in a salty guy. Not that Bumgarner is that, but bring in a salty guy or a veteran guy or somebody who commands attention right off the bat. Perhaps that's the way to do it.
What do you think the Cardinals think they are?
Well, I think they think they're better than they are. And that can be problematic, right? Because I think one of the things we've seen in recent years is that they have over-evaluated their talent, particularly on the prospect side. And I think what they thought a lot of their minor league players would become. And that has kind of put them in a churn of sorts. I mean, and use the outfield as an example. I, you know, can't count the number of times in the last 5 years that they brought up an outfielder thinking that he was going to be a core piece of the future, and that outfielder is now playing somewhere else. So I think they have to do a very deep and honest look internally at their evaluation process. And I think they're in a tough spot, guys, because especially on the position player side, most of these guys are locked in for the next couple years. So, you know, as you forecast even beyond this year, I'm not sure where you're going to be able to make a lot of changes unless you start making change for change's sake. But certainly, I think it takes some honest evaluation. And it's very interesting, guys, that here we are at a point in the season that was very similar to where they were last season, and that cost Mike Matheny his job. And that's not to put the blame on Mike Schilt, but it is to say that results, if you're looking squarely at results, they've not gotten better in a year's time.
Jen Langosch will be at Join for Joe tomorrow at the Ford Plaza at Busch Stadium before the Cardinals 6:15 game against the Diamondbacks. And we really appreciate and love the work that you do for leukemia and lymphoma, preserving the memory of Joe Strauss. We all need to remember Joe.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me talk a little bit about that mission. I look forward to joining you guys again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jen. Take care. That's our friend Jen Langosch, MLB.com on 101 ESPN. Coming up, the Cardinals had to switch starting pitchers tonight. That'll be part of our Hot Topics of the Day next on 101 ESPN. Paul Goldschmidt faces his former Diamondback teammates for the first time tonight at the ballpark. 7:15 as the Cards take on Arizona. Adam Wainwright was supposed to start for the Cardinals, but he suffered from back spasms yesterday, last night, and today. He's been scratched, and Daniel Ponce de Leon will start in his place. And the Cardinals have a very interesting lineup today. Tommy Edmond is at second base and leading off. Jose Martinez is in left field hitting second. Shortstop Paul DeJong hits third. Goldschmidt is your cleanup hitter at first base. Matt Carpenter hits fifth. He's back in the lineup at third base. Dexter Fowler hitting sixth in right field. Matt Wieters is hitting seventh behind the plate. Harrison Bader is hitting eighth. And, of course, he is in center field with Ponce de Leon on the mound.
I know Mike Schilt, before this game a few days ago, was pretty noncommittal about whether or not Carpenter would lead off again. Well, there's your answer. He's down in the order. He's batting fifth. I know he has said for a long time that it doesn't really matter wherever he hits, that he's fine. He's perfectly fine being anywhere, but we know what the numbers are. The numbers are that he has typically done better in the leadoff spot. Problem is, this year, he hasn't been a typically good Matt Carpenter, so I don't think you can have him leading off games. You might as well ride the Edmund thing while it's working.
And they keep moving Paul Goldschmidt down, too. He's hitting fourth now, goes from second to third to fourth now.
Yeah, a lot of guys are struggling, and those are the two. Like, those are the. I know we expect a lot from Marcell Ozuna because that's why they acquired him, and he's been okay up until he got hurt, but the problem is your other two big boys in the lineup are just not doing what they should be doing for you. Paul Goldschmidt is an above average hitter overall this year in the National League, but they didn't acquire him to be above average. They acquired him to be great, and he has not been so far this season, and Matt Carpenter has been a shell of himself. If the Cardinals don't get production out of those two guys, regardless of where they are in the order, they're just not going anywhere this year.
And the Diamondbacks will have Carson Kelly in their lineup. They'll have Jared Dyson, Ketel Marte, the all-star. He's in center field tonight, and Eduardo Escobar at second. Christian Walker Adam Jones in right, Jake Lamb at third, Nick Ahmed is their shortstop, Carson Kelly behind the plate, and Robbie Ray on the mound. Well, you've been waiting for Blues news, and we've got some for you. The St. Louis Blues making a deal today. President of Hockey Operations and General Manager Doug Armstrong announcing that the Blues have acquired forward Dakota Joshua from Toronto in exchange for future considerations. Joshua was originally drafted by Toronto in the fifth round of the 2014 draft, played 4 years at Ohio State. Last year, he had 22 points on 9 goals and 13 assists. So the Blues trade future considerations to the Maple Leafs for Dakota Joshua.
Randy, how many Dakotas are we going to have in this town?
A lot.
We've got too many Dakotas and way
Dakota
too many.
Dakota Hudson, Dak.
Yeah, too many of those, too many Coltons.
Mm-hmm.
We're on overload of Dakotas and Coltons this year.
So let's cut back.
Hold on. We increased. Who are we going to get rid of, though? Because we want Parayko.
Yeah.
I think we still want Wong, right? Exceptional fielder.
Yeah. And we probably...
We want Dakota Hudson.
And we probably want Dakota Joshua. So we'll just get rid of
him. I guess we got to keep him.
Yeah. That's all right. Today at the Wimbledon Championships, Roger Federer defeated Rafi Nadal. And so it'll be old school. It's Federer and Djokovic for the championship.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. The official trade now is in. Russell Westbrook gets traded from Oklahoma City to Houston for Chris Paul, 2 protected first-round picks, and 2 pick swaps. So it's Harden and Westbrook together again in Houston.
They're great friends now.
Yeah.
They say that they were friendly with each other, but they got to be better friends after the fact. So now they're back together. Here's what's going to be interesting. You've got two guys who are dominant with the ball.
Yes.
But not so good without it. And in fact, I believe that they were 1 and 2 in the league last year in their usage, in the amount of times they had the ball. So somebody, actually maybe both of them, are going to have to alter their game a little bit here. I'm intrigued by the idea of those two guys playing together. But if you have two ball-dominant guys on the team together.
Ball-dominant means they're both ball hugs.
That's exactly what it means. Yeah. So, hey, the old school way of saying it. You're exactly right. They're both ball hogs. They're not very good when they don't have the ball. They're not, you know, they don't take your attention away. So that's kind of a problem. They're going to have to fix that. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I do know the West is really interesting. Hey, not everybody in OKC is happy right now.
Not everybody.
About losing Russ.
No, they don't understand the rebuild process. They're tearing it down there.
But you know what? In a couple of years, they're going to be interesting again. They got how many picks? How many first-rounders?
Like
they got swaps?
Eight picks. Eight first-rounders in the next 4 years. Or maybe it's in the next 6 years they have some, like, 10 picks.
Yeah, I think it's something crazy like 8 to 10. They'll be a really interesting team to watch over the next several seasons, but I think as for next year, Houston will be an intriguing team.
And one happy note for you, we all remember our friend Richie Incognito, who's had his issues in the NFL. This year, after a year off, re-signed in the NFL with the Raiders. Well, he has been suspended for a couple of games by the NFL already for conduct detrimental and violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. He's eligible to participate in training camp, but because he pled guilty to 2 misdemeanors after an incident involving his 90-year-old grandmother, he has been suspended for a couple of games. Whenever you have an incident and police are called and you're with your 90-year-old grandmother, that should cause you to be suspended.
How are you going to get suspended with grandma?
How does that happen?
I don't know.
You get arrested.
There's something. He's just not a very good dude. I think he's just a bad person.
I think but I think he's also messed up in the head.
Certainly messed up in the head.
Yeah.
You know who else is messed up, and I do feel bad for him, is Dwight Gooden. We were talking about this in the office. Apparently, he had been arrested last month for cocaine possession.
Dwight Gooden?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. He has a substance abuse problem, and it's bad. I saw the headline. I thought, is this 1986? What's going on here?
Unreal.
But, yeah, it happened again.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Hey, unfortunately for Wes, who beat me yesterday in the 4 o'clock fight, he beat me 4-4, he's not able to get off work to participate in an early edition of the 4 o'clock fight.
So he's out.
Yeah, we've got a new fighter
But Randy,
Jason,
all you have to do is ask your boss. If you tell your boss that you're going to do the fight, yes,
for God's sakes,
they'll give you some minutes off.
You would think so. Anyway, we do have the 4 o'clock fight coming your way because we're going to talk to Greg Amzinger at 4. So, quick 4 o'clock fight coming your way next on 101 ESPN.
Hey, meat. Oh, wait a minute.
That's not meat.
It isn't meat. It's Scotty.
What's
Manziar.
Up, man?
What's happening, big boy?
Oh, you know, living the dream, living my final show with you today.
Is this it? This is the final?
No, no, this is only my final with you. I'm taking one of those retirement celebrations, right?
You like Jeter?
I'm going to go to your show, and then I'm going to go to Anthony Stalter in the Turn next week and the Kevin Wheeler show, I think.
Is anybody,
but I don't get to go on the Bernie show.
Has anybody framed second base and given it to you?
No. Are we talking about like the baseball second base or like the
females? Oh, for the love of Pete. All right. Hey, listen, a special thing is going to happen today. A handful of times in the show over the last couple of years when you are filling in for Brad Barnes, we do a wonderful, lovely segment called Scotty Doesn't Know. And we do it because Scott is, I don't know how it's happened, but the kid doesn't know anything that happened before 2012. All right? He has no idea about anything that's gone on in the world prior to, well, you were born in what, 96?
Yes.
Okay. So anything that happened, somehow, stuff that happened between 96 and 2012 you don't know about.
12 is pretty generous.
Now that I think about it.
This is the 2010s this week, though.
So what we used to do is ask Scotty questions about like stuff that everybody knows. And people would text in during the segment and go, there's no way this kid doesn't know this stuff. And it's real. So we've decided to flip it a little bit. Today, the segment is going to be called Scotty Does Know. And he is going to ask Randy and I questions. Randy and me, he's going to ask us questions about stuff that's happened in the last decade, millennial stuff,
and
we're
going to
see if we know it.
And you're going to look so dumb, Ron, it's going to be hilarious.
All right, well, we'll find out about that. But right now, it's 4 o'clock fight time. What are we fighting over?
All right, today we're fighting over on Saturday, July 27th, the Cardinals host the Astros, and that night, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older will receive a replica 2004 National League Champions Mystery Player ring, courtesy of Edward Jones. Get your tickets at cardinals.com/promotions.
Awesome, and since we don't have Wes today, who couldn't get off work for some reason, who's our fighter?
It's Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Hi.
What's going on, man? How are you?
All right. Pretty good. Yourself?
Oh, man. I feel great. It's Friday, you know?
I hear you.
Yeah. Are you off work today?
No, I'm working.
Oh, good. See, you know what? Wes couldn't even tell whoever his boss is that he just, you know, look, I'm going to do the 4 o'clock fight today, and you're just going to have to deal with it. I appreciate, and we all do, appreciate the fact that you told your boss to stick it.
I appreciate it.
All right. Are you ready to fight Randy?
Sure.
So it is flashback week, and these are questions that pertain to the 2010s, the decade we are currently in and is almost over.
Yeah, that's my era.
It is your era. All right, so here we go, Jason. Question number one. What is the top grossing film of this decade? Is it Avengers Endgame, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, or Jurassic World?
Star Wars.
All right, Jason, question number two. Which artist has had the most number one singles since 2010? Is it Rihanna? Is it Drake? Or is it Katy Perry?
Rihanna.
I don't know how this happened. I don't know how this happened.
Okay, Jason. We got to have to tell you what's going on here. Scotty must have pulled up an old fight, and the options for this question he has written down, and he didn't realize it until the very last second. So the question is, which artist has the most number one single since 2010? The options he has written down here are Rihanna, Red Berenson, or Phil Quinn.
Rihanna.
We can't tell you if it's right or not.
You're such an idiot. That is one of the best meetups, and he's not even here. Oh my God.
I literally thought for a second, I was like, oh, you guys screwed me over.
I was like, wait, Red Berenson had a music career? When did that happen?
It didn't.
You were such an idiot. Oh, I cannot wait for Scotty Does Know. All right. So the answer you gave was Rihanna. Okay. Question number three. Boston has had how many championships since 2010? We're talking about all teams, correct?
Correct.
Yes. All right. Is it 4, 5, or 6?
6.
And we should also, it's like the big four, right? Are we talking about big four sports?
Yeah.
So no MLS stuff or any
correct.
Of that? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Okay, Jason, last question. In the viral video in the 2010s, you can sometimes hear one name or the other. In this instance, do you hear Laurel or what this name says? Do you hear Minnie, Yanni, or Lauren?
Lauren.
All right, let's bring in Randy. Jason, how do you feel?
I don't know. Not
you know,
very good.
I wonder if we should ask this last question differently.
Okay.
Okay.
We can.
So let me ask you one more time. All right. In that viral video, what were the options? Was it, should I just say it, even though Randy's in the studio?
We can give him the lifeline here.
All right. Randy, you might just get a free one. Is it Laurel or what was the other option? That's it.
Laurel. Oh.
Okay. Well, we'll just go with it. Anyway, it's a confusing question, and we hope to fix it, but I guess
sorry,
we didn't.
Jason.
Sorry, Jason. Randy is here. Randy,
I'm
say
here.
Hello to Jason.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
All right. How you doing, Randy?
Outstanding. Thank you very much for participating today. We appreciate you listening.
Jason is at work. Just like Wes is,
uh-huh.
But Randy, Jason told his boss to, you know,
hey, and I bet the boss
go fly a kite.
You get a chance to be on the 4 o'clock fight?
Exactly. So Jason's done it. Are you ready?
Ready.
There is a tremendous meetup in this fight that
okay.
we'll get to later,
okay.
by the way. Question number
but,
one.
But wait, Meat's not here.
I don't know how it happened.
Scotty's here
yep.
in place of Meat.
What
yes,
is
sir.
The top grossing film of the decade?
Of 2010s.
It was last year's Avengers movie that had the, maybe even this year's, had the unbelievable opening, the Avengers movie. I'm going to call it The Avengers.
All right. We'll give you that, Randy.
But we're going to accept it
yep.
because you
Thanks.
Said it was the most recent one.
Randy, question number two. Which artist has had the most number one singles since 2010?
I think you should ask for the lifeline.
Really?
Yeah.
Most number one singles since 2010. Okay, I'll go with the lifeline.
Okay.
All right.
He's going to give you the corrected lifeline here.
Okay, I'll give you the corrected lifeline.
No, I want the one that... I want the other one.
We'll give you that one next.
Okay.
Okay. Before you give the lifeline, give me the lifeline.
All right. I'm going to give you Rihanna, Drake, or Katy Perry.
Oh, wow. I was going to say Taylor Swift. I will go with, this is Billboard's Hot 100 number ones?
Yes.
I'll go with Katy Perry.
All right. Do you want to know what he has written down?
Yes, I do.
Which artist has had the most number one singles since 2010? Is it Rihanna, Red Berenson?
I'll go with the redhead.
Or
Phil Goyette.
And I didn't know until after I said
Rihanna.
Oh, God, Rihanna.
It's awesome,
buddy.
All right, question three. Boston has had how many championships since 2010? Big four sports.
Okay. Last time the Celtics won was in 2008. The Bruins have one of them, 2011. The Red Sox have 2013 and 2018, so that's three. And the Patriots have three. So that would be four, five, six in the big four for Boston since 2010.
All right, Randy, final question. In the viral video in the 2010s, you remember this video. We'll play it for you in a second. Well, actually, we'll play you the audio, not the video, okay, since you won't be able to see it. But you can sometimes hear either Laurel or what's the other name that sometimes people hear?
I just heard Laurel.
So, but sometimes in this video or this audio, you can hear Minnie, Yanni, or Lauren. Which one do you think it is?
I was just going to say, I know it's Yanni. I didn't even need a lifeline there.
But we have a winner. Well, Jason, this was a close fight. 2-1 was the final today. It is, in fact, Avengers Endgame. That is the top-grossing film of the decade. Rihanna has 9 number one singles since 2010. Mm. Boston has had 5 championships since 2010, according to Scotty. And it was either Laurel or Yanni that you heard in that. I still hear Laurel, by the way, Jason.
I do, too. Yeah. I do, too.
So, Jason, thanks for playing today.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good to have you with us on 101 ESPN.
Red Berenson.
That's pretty funny.
What a music career.
Unbelievable. So, did I, let's see.
Well, we think Scotty's wrong about question three.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, either way, you win. It is six.
Okay.
We've had six.
Good.
But you still win.
All right. It is coming up on 4 o'clock. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler, MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, Lindenwood grad, native St. Louis, and our favorite guest is next on 101 ESPN. And